Hi, this is Jim Menick, and this is The View from Tab. As a real surprise, I have managed to resurrect the original interview I did with John Cruise this last November at Monticello. It's not the best quality recording. What I had to ultimately do was play back from my iPod, which still had the raw interview, and play it live over my speakers into the microphone and push it into the recording program that way. There's a mild degradation of the sound quality as a result, but the degradation of the sound quality in no way is equal to the degradation of your mind that will ensue from listening to this interview. I was going to edit it a little bit and make it more palatable, but now I've had to listen to it about 27 times to make this actually work, and if I had to listen to it one more time, I'd have to kill Cruise. So, let's listen.
I mean, I'll do an introduction at another time.
Oh, quick, the one that I can't hear until
exactly. That son of a bitch! I never did like him!
Great.
All right, but, and I can't watch the end. All this kind of stuff like this, will all, as you can see, it all shows up. So, no noise on the table.
Of course.
The way to do it. Okay. So, what I wanted to start with was just asking you a little bit about your own high school career. I mean, what did you do? I mean, I assume you did LD in high school, right?
I did do LD in high school.
Where did you go to high school?
I went to Great Neck South High School in Long Island.
Is there a Great Neck North?
There is a Great Neck North.
Do they do debate?
They don't do debate. There's a big rivalry in schools, between the schools, but I don't really know what the rivalry is over anymore, so.
It's not over debate. Who's the coach?
Well, the coach when I was in high school is Bill Neville, but currently I'm actually not sure who the coach is. I believe there's a faculty advisor.
Yes.
Can you help them?
I'm afraid not.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Plaza.
Mm-hmm.
We're just giving you a break.
Yeah.
You've already volunteered to help heat the food next year at Big Bronx. That's mm-hmm. by far the most important volunteer work that needs to happen.
I'm just pushing you about that.
Yeah, we are sitting in the tab room. People are going to be coming and going.
That's
we'll do our best to make it happen. Okay, so anyway, who's the coach again?
When I was in high school, Bill Neville was the coach. Okay. Currently, I'm not sure who the coach is, actually.
But they still have teams, right?
There is a team.
They come around. Yeah, I thought so. Now, I mean, to me, I mean, just from my particular vision, all these schools in Long Island, like Great Neck and Roslyn and everything, are pretty much on the same block.
They are very close to each other. That's
they really,
true.
I mean, are they that close? I mean,
actually, it's funny that you mentioned Roslyn because that's where my parents moved while I was in college. You know, they waited for me to go to college.
Did they give you the address where they had gone to?
It took a while. It took some nudging, but
my parents did the same thing. I know that mine left the state. At least yours just
But it is a stone's throw. There's like an exit or two down from Great Neck.
And where is Chaminade?
They are in Mineola, which is not too far away from there. So it's one close-knit Long Island debate community.
Is there a Long Island League?
There is. The Long Island Forensic Association, LIFA. I am a child of LIFA.
Okay, so is that comparable to Mid-Hudson League? Like it's local and they all debate?
It's local. We all debate. The main differences are that, at least when I was debating, the rounds were single-flighted. Okay. So it's a tougher judge requirement. And there weren't really oral critiques. And students couldn't judge. So you were always judged by parents or by coaches.
Which... Yeah, I was assuming that Brother John was involved, they're not judging the states either, so it all connects.
That's true.
But that forces a lot of parents in then.
It does. And frequently, and I guess this is why sometimes I have a reluctant to cut kids from tournaments and whatnot, but we would frequently be rushing for judges on Wednesday night,
mm-hmm.
same as any league, I would think, and usually still be confirming them on Friday. But they were almost always parents.
So anyhow, went to Vassar. What did you go into Vassar for? I mean, what was your plans going into college?
Well, I knew I wanted to major in history. I briefly thought about double majoring in political science and history, and then about double majoring in philosophy and history, and I actually came close to that. I also thought about double majoring in German and history, and then after my second year of German, I realized that I would be at Vassar for a very long time if I thought I would ever be able to accumulate the number of credits required for a double major in German. And so that kind of petered out after my sophomore
year. But did you go in wanting to teach? I mean, thinking of teach coming out?
I'm not 100% sure. When I was much younger, The first thing I ever wanted to be was a rabbi, actually, when I was much younger. And then...
Have you gotten over that?
I got over that a really long time ago.
Okay, just checking.
I was really interested in politics for a very long time, and I used to think that I would do either work directly in politics. I'm not sure if I would be in politics, but definitely maybe be a political analyst.
I don't know where Lakeland is.
So who are we missing? A judge or...
I forgot where we were.
You were going to be a rabbi.
Oh, a pastor. That's right. Yeah. So a rabbi, then there was some political analyst. Before that, at one point, I thought I would be doing work in computers. I even liked architecture at one point. But by the time I got to Vassar, I knew I was really interested in history. And actually, I was really interested in teaching. And originally, I came in...
At the high school level?
Originally, I thought that I was going to teach at the college level. And I was very, very interested in pursuing a PhD. And for the first 2.5 years of college, that was pretty much my plan, although I never really did any active work to determine exactly where I would go to graduate school.
Did you go to class and stuff?
I did go to class. I did go to class, and...
That's where I missed
it. Right. I did go to class, and I actually did follow up on certain graduate-level studies for things that I was studying. I did a lot of work on the late 19th century and the history of sexuality, actually. So a lot of stuff.
Did they have sex in the 19th century?
They did have sex. They had a lot of sex in the 19th century.
More than now? Depends on who you were, right?
That's true. And I don't know. Some argue that they talked about it more then than they do now. So.
Yeah.
I'm really glad to know that the Bronx Science students can now download this interview and hear me say that.
This is the stuff we won't be editing out.
Of course.
As a matter of fact, this is all we're going to leave in.
Excellent. Great.
I know that at one point you were... Vassar had a tournament. Now, did Vassar have a tournament before you were there?
No, I started that tournament.
And what year were you when you started this?
Well, I got the idea for starting a regular invitation in my freshman year, but it didn't get started until my sophomore year. And at the same time, I knew I wanted to do a round robin, which is something I had come into college wanting to do. And that took a little bit longer to start up.
Yeah. People keep coming. We should just lock the door of TAB.
Keep their own ballots.
And just... We'll be here all night. The hell with them. That's pretty much the TAB philosophy.
That's true.
As a general rule.
That's very true.
Anyway, we're talking about the round. So you wanted to do the round robin first,
They came together, but I knew that I wanted to do the round robin apart from the tournament, which some people thought was a little weird at first, especially because the Vassar tournament itself wasn't a national tournament that I inherited, so some people thought a round robin could build up the reputation of the tournament, but the kind of round robin I knew I wanted to do was for younger debaters. So even had I attached it to the tournament, it wouldn't necessarily have built it up with big names because none of the kids were quote-unquote big names yet anyway, and I wasn't really interested in them to begin with.
No, I remember you got in touch with me at one point.
That's true.
And I tried to talk you out of it.
You did.
Unsuccessfully, I guess, because you did have the tournament.
That's true.
Part of the problem was not anybody having a tournament, it's just there's just so many weekends.
Oh, yeah, no, it was very difficult. Mm-hmm. Actually, I remember a certain coach from Lexington contacting me and telling me that if I took his weekend, he would strike me down with his mighty sword. That was actually the exact quotation. I still have that email.
You don't have the mighty sword.
I don't have the mighty sword.
But you didn't do it on his weekend.
I did not dare do it on his weekend after that email, nor was I ever going to do it on that weekend.
No, I don't blame you. But anyway, I mean, the tournament hasn't lasted. The round robin certainly has lasted. It's become a bit of an institution, but the tournament didn't.
Unfortunately, the tournament didn't. Basically, what happened, there are a couple of issues with it. I mean, the first tournament thing is that it's very hard to run a college tournament because if you don't have outside people coming and work on it, as I quickly learned, it was very difficult to run. Fortunately, we did have some people from the outside. The Reverend B.A. Gregg came in to help us out.
The Rev came in.
He was actually at the very
raising
first
the level of insanity.
Yes,
no doubt.
That was good. Okay. And enjoyability and insanity, all in one package. And so that that helped while I was in college. And a lot of
where did you know him from?
Actually, I got to know him through the tournament. He was just an early supporter of a new tournament and said that I seemed to have a lot of enthusiasm, so he wanted to come and support.
You have too much enthusiasm.
That's probably true. Yeah. But whatever. So I came
in. We're trying to tamp that down.
It'll just keep coming. But maybe I'll become jaded.
We've worn out more enthusiastic people than you.
Okay, fair enough. We'll see. I'll take that challenge. Yeah. But the good thing is that the tournament, it did start to grow. The unfortunate thing was that it was difficult to convince a lot of people to actually debate on the March-April topic. So we tried to experiment. Yeah, we did try to experiment. There was a late tournament. And what we did in its final year of operation was to turn into a challenge tournament, which to my knowledge was the first time that had ever been done in an LT tournament in the Northeast. And that was a lot of fun. I got to take on a very Bob Barker persona, and I had like one of those long microphones and everything, and that was a little exciting. And I made it, I mean, if you think that there's pomp and circumstance at the Bronx tournament, you were never at the Hudson Valley Challenge.
Thank God.
No, yeah, well, yeah. The other problem, of course, was that, and this is, again, the problem with college tournaments is that since a lot of people don't like to let go, the college students who had by that point had decided that the, you know, the tournament was theirs as much as it was mine, insisted on tabbing by index card, and it was a large enough tournament to make that very difficult. Okay, so
they
insisted that we use index cards.
Now, these were people had no clue ever.
Well, they
had no exposure whatsoever to.
They did run Parley tournaments.
All right, well, Parley is Parley.
Parley is Parley. Yeah. And I tried to explain that Parley is Parley and LD is LD, but that didn't really work. So, what we did was I tried to do some work on it and try to help in tab and sort of was kind of shut out of my own tab room, I guess.
Needless to say, the tour, I mean, that is well known that you were locked out of tab.
Yes, that's true. But people did overall have a pretty good time.
I got a kick out of that. I wish I had been there.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was sitting on the floor dejected. I think Chayton Herzig may have even taken a picture of me. But the good...
Yeah, Shane, if you're listening to this, just send me the picture. We'll post it along with the interview.
Well, the good thing is that people did have a good, seemed to have a good time overall, and then we had a big snowstorm, so that actually made, like, I could use that as an excuse for why the tournament was starting to fall hideously behind, because the tabbing by note card was ridiculous. Yes. And so that tournament kind of folded.
Actually, I mean, I had two guys that went who were young. I guess they were freshmen, or they might have been in eighth grade.
They were eighth graders.
And they had a ball, because they got two to be... Yeah, really good people, who they ordinarily wouldn't have had a chance to do. Because I mean, I know especially Craig just kept challenging the best person, and I guess he was doing the worst possible because he kept challenging the best possible people, and had a ball actually doing that. So that was fun.
Right. I think the idea of a challenge tournament is fun, and I would like to do one again in the future. Just finding a weekend was really hard.
Yeah, really silly. But the round robin's safe.
The round robin I plan to do forever. Till the end of my days.
But it will still be a Vassar.
It will still be a Vassar. Yeah.
So nice why does Vassar care? I mean, because of their Parley team or the administration?
Actually, the round robin is entirely a private affair at this point. And over the years at Vassar, since I'm a big history nerd, general history, and debate history, but also Vassar history,
I used to do... We're in, this is like the death war. You get people coughing in the back. God's magic mountain, you know? just wrap him up and put him out in the porch. Yes.
Okay, so why Vassar? I really love Vassar. It's a nice excuse for me to go up there. I think it's a beautiful campus and very inspiring in terms of the academic look of the campus. I feel like it's sort of a nice attachment.
Excuse me, guys, could you not talk, please? Because I'm trying to interview you. I realize I didn't tell you that. Just if you could.
Sorry.
Oh. don't take it the wrong way. We're actually recording.
Okay, so
anyhow, there's a nice campus. You think it's a
beautiful campus? I think a really nice setting for a round robin. Over the years, when I was there, I became very close with the people in campus activities. So they actually sort of go, you know, they find ways around some of the rules to get me a spot there every year, and I can do it as a student, even though I've since graduated. So it's really nice, and it's a nice way to keep in touch with the school. And actually, the new president of Vassar. Our former president was amazing, Fran Ferguson. She just retired after 20 years, and she had taken an active interest in the round robin. And the new president was actually already aware of it and mentioned it to a few faculty members, which I thought was pretty incredible.
But they do have a Parley team, right?
So they do have a Parley team, but the Parley team has no involvement with the round robin.
One of the questions I have, which changes a little bit, how did you get involved with victory briefs?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Victor and Beats both know this. I just really dislike victory briefs for a couple of reasons. When Victory Briefs Daily started, and there was a VBD before I was involved with it, that was a very cool idea of Beats's, and I thought it actually was an excellent idea. The only thing I didn't like about it was that it seemed to think that the Northeast didn't exist. Now, the real reason for that was that there was nobody reporting from the Northeast. But when I first saw the website, I thought, what a great idea. It's too bad that this is all about Minnesota and California. and there doesn't seem to be much from the Northeast. So I decided to take an active interest after a little while and just send in results from Northeast tournaments, whether or not I was actually at those tournaments. At that point, LDDebate.org was all the craze, and I was a big nerd, just as I am now, but in those days, my nerdiness manifested themselves through thousands of posts on LDDebate.org.
So I have to admit, I mean, LDDebate.org, which is perfectly fine, I personally am not a forum. I mean, forums are hard.
Forums are hard.
And a blog approach, like Victory Briefs, for someone who's just casually looking at it,
that's
trying
right.
to pick up news, I think the Victory Briefs approach is much better.
Yeah, I agree.
Is LDDebate.org still there?
It is. Unfortunately, there have been a number of hacker attacks that caused these viruses to appear on the website that I think really curtailed the number of people who were reading it.
Like I said, it's too much. I mean, I want the information. I don't want to get all that involved. Right. If you want to get involved, I'm sure forums are the way to go. And I know that Beez was even putting forums into Victory Briefs, which I might be more interested in. My complaint about that, again, there's too many. I mean,
forums can be difficult.
The LDDebate.org.
But that was how I started with Victory Briefs, was to send in results. And then what I started to do, I can't take credit for the photos of tournaments either, because the very first tournament that I know that there were photos from on VBD was at Apple Valley a few years ago. And in fact, there was a photo on the front page of John McNeil and John McKay after John McNeil had won the tournament, and sort of what has become the pose of finalists with the arm around each other. And that was the first
time picture you always take before the finals,
yes,
while they're still talking
exactly,
to each other.
While they're still smiling. In fact, what readers, I guess listeners at home might be interested to know is that if I can get a hold of the hardware before the picture, I will actually take both versions. So I have alternate universe photos of
Dewey wins.
Exactly. I have every version of many pictures. You can see Corbin Cass winning the Bronx Round Robin and Jacob Levy winning the Bronx tournament and so on and so forth.
It's funny because as you say this, I never knew there was a Victory Briefs before you were already involved in it. So, I mean, the fact that it wasn't Northeast coverage may explain that.
That may be. And when I was in high school, I knew Victory Briefs for the briefs. I have to say that in high school, given that we didn't have we had a program that had been around for a long time with people who worked very hard at the program, but sometimes given that it was a relatively small team, it was really hard to get a sense of what other arguments were out there. And since we had a coach who worked hard on administrative things but wasn't always as involved in the idea formulation stage of debate and more in terms of case revision, it was really helpful to have those briefs, but that was sort of all I knew about Victory Briefs. I didn't know that they had really coverage of tournaments.
So you didn't go in writing briefs?
Right. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I first got involved with Victory Briefs, I guess I was sort of an unknown quantity in a lot of ways. I probably am still an unknown quantity, but I was definitely an unknown quantity at some level, in the sense that I don't know that Beats knew what he was getting himself into when he brought me on board, because the original idea was for me to send in Northeast results, and then it became, well, why don't you handle the photos and be the photo editor? And then I think within the span of 3 weeks, I was starting to write a very large number of articles on the front page.
Every day.
And finding articles to write every day.
Or if there is nothing, today is a day we have no articles.
That's correct. Yeah, those are clever. People post on those as much as they post on some of the other ones.
I'm sure they do. Anyhow, I mean, Victory Briefs, what is the goal of Victory Briefs? I mean, they are...
Do you mean of the
organization.
Organization or the website?
The organization itself, because, I mean, from my perspective, they are focal in LD. And... it's hard for me to imagine at this point that everybody doesn't get their news from them and keep track of what's going on and everything. And I always feel that, you know, like especially, I mean, I talk to you or I talk to Mike, there's a good responsiveness and understanding of the responsibilities that go with that. But I mean, what is their feeling? Feeling for that matter? You're one of the.
Okay, well, I can tell you that given my own background in debate, I think actually my own background and what has eventually got me really into Victory Briefs may explain that very well, actually. When I got involved in Victory Briefs, my background in debate had been, with two exceptions, entirely local tournaments on a team that didn't have a big coaching staff. And I had, by that point, started to judge pretty frequently at areas or tournaments in the area and started to run tournaments. But a lot of my background was not... quote unquote national circuit. And what I discovered, you know, so when I became involved, like I said, I didn't really have a big national circuit background. And I really associated Victory Briefs both with evidence and with the national circuit, you know, whatever that is. What I learned once I got on board Victory Briefs is that actually many of the people involved with it did not really have a big national circuit background either. While Victor G won the Berkeley tournament when he was in high school, so he's the 1989 Berkeley champion for trivia fans. But when he did win the Berkeley tournament, but at that time the Berkeley tournament was still primarily a California tournament, and that, in fact, almost all of his debating was on the local circuit. And he did do very well at nationals, but again, you know, nationals is a championship of local circuits. So Victor's idea, as I understood it when I came on board, and as I have definitely understood to be true the more and more I've gotten involved with Victory Briefs, is to be a resource for all debaters. And the idea is that it's a way of both fostering a community among possibly disconnected or just unconnected circuits, but also giving resources to students who do not otherwise have access to those resources. And you know, when I hear people talk about Victory Briefs sort of this national circuit club, I've come to realize how that is not really the case, even though before I got involved with Victory Briefs, I did think that was the case. I think that the general idea is to create a community and create resources for that community.
How did you get involved in the Bronx?
Oh, that's another interesting question. Ting Ting Tam, who is a debater at Bronx Science, who I primarily knew for her name and her code, which would occasionally appear as TTT on scams, and I thought that was kind of cool.
And very difficult to type in.
That is true, very difficult to type in. She approached me at a tournament and let me know that Bronx Science was looking for a coach. And at that time, I actually at first tried to see if Beats was interested in moving out to New York, because he had been thinking about moving from Minnesota and, you know, since then has moved to California. But then as Ting Ting talked to me some more, it was clear to me that she was actually asking me to apply. And the interesting thing is that when I first came in, a lot of people told me that I had to be kind of crazy to take over that job, both because of the administrative nightmare of the running a team of that size, given that all my previous experience coaching was one or two kids at a time, so it'd be a big shift. But also given that reportedly there had been some uneasy relationships with the school. So a lot of people told me I was crazy. In fact, as I recall, just about everybody told me not to take the job, except for you. And your opinion outweighed everyone else's.
So if you don't like this,
and if
I'm
I don't like
trouble,
it, it's all your fault. No, but I've loved it a lot since then, and it's true. Actually, everybody did tell me that I had to take the job.
Really? I mean, obviously you had the interest and the experience. It seemed to me that taking the potential of a school like Bronx with a history
on top of it.
I mean, forgetting the fact that you're a history buff, but just the fact that there's a dedication to forensics. And a lot of raw material.
Yeah, and the great
thing
is...
What more would you want if you're a coach? There are a lot of kids to work with. Yeah.
And the great thing is that the kids are great. The school has been extremely supportive. We have a really supportive alumni base. I really am enjoying it a lot. I mean, it has definitely been a big challenge to adapt to running a program with like over 200 students.
I think it'll have to take you. I mean, I've been running a program that's obviously a lot smaller, and I'm still learning a lot of stuff.
Right.
I mean, it's just... It is a learning thing, and then where you're going to... concentrate and all this sort of stuff, but I mean, and the numbers there being so vast, and the delegation
there,
that is required.
Delegation has been a task I've had, or a skill that I've had some difficulty learning over the years, but this year I have come to understand why it's an important skill.
Yeah. I got distracted. Oh, I was gonna now before you were actually doing the Bronx, and even as you've been doing the Bronx, you're still involved in. Traveling around on the national circuit and judging the national circuit. Now, at some point, there has to be a conflict, if for no other reason, just on your time, because you can't, and it's not a question of like you're ignoring your team, but on your own team, you have kids you want to send to national tournaments and you have 10,000 novices.
Right.
So how do you, you haven't yet, and I don't think you would, I think it's going to take you a long time. So how do you see sort of adjusting so you get the time to focus where you want to focus?
Well, right now, for example, the Minneapolis is happening, and I'm here at an elementary school near Monticello High School running a small local tournament primarily for novices. And, it's hard to balance, especially this year. We have really a ludicrous number of novices. Last year, we were able to kind of scare some of them away by looking at really...
Try to scare them away next year, too.
Yeah, well, we even tried... sort of actively to see if we could separate the most dedicated people from the least dedicated people. What we found out is that we had 50-something really dedicated novices, so that's good.
But, it was a big school. It's like a couple of thousand kids,
it is a big
right?
school.
So any class has 500 or so right. kids, and you know, sheer numbers, and it's a magnet school, so yeah, it's all bright kids. And, you know, forensics is an attractive activity.
That is true. It is very attractive.
Why not?
But in terms of balancing travel tournaments and non-travel tournaments, this year is going to be an interesting experiment. I was very hesitant, actually, about going to St. Mark's, even though St. Mark's is one of my absolute favorite tournaments, because St. Mark's conflicted with our first novice tournament. And the possibility of going to the novice tournament was ruled out simply because of chaperone responsibilities that needed to happen for St. Mark's. So I didn't really have to make the call on that one. What I felt when I planned out my own schedule of traveling was to try to balance as much as possible local tournaments with, you know, quote-unquote national tournaments. Fortunately, we have some people at Bronx Science who are more than willing to chaperone tournaments, and they're even willing to chaperone tournaments flying elsewhere. Since we have a pretty large program, we also have coaches who are not teachers who come along on trips, so they've been really helpful. This year, for example, we even went to multiple travel tournaments on one weekend and also went to a local tournament. The good thing is that since we have so many kids, having all these tournaments in our schedule not only helps us go around the country, but just helps us have tournament opportunities for kids. So in terms of my own role...
That's true. I mean, you need slots.
Yeah, exactly.
To fill in. Yeah.
And that's why, I mean, tournaments in the area are really great, because a lot of the tournaments don't have very low entry limits or don't have entry limits at all, which is great. And actually, one of the reasons why Apple Valley is a good tournament on our schedule is a travel tournament, because it also doesn't have entry limits in the younger divisions. So I guess in my own role, a lot of people associate me with the national circuit, which I find really, you know, it's very weird still to me, because when I was in high school, I went to so few national circuit tournaments. The one that I went to that I did well at, when I did well and I saw that I had cleared, the first thing that I noticed was a group of students who I recognized were the national circuit clique, who were asking, you know, who the hell is Great Neck South JC when they saw it. So it's very weird for me to think that I would be associated with a crowd of people that that I was never a part of. But that having been said, I guess now that I'm getting more and more involved running a very large program, I see that there are some national circuit tournaments that I simply can't go to, even if we're going to. And it's been a weird adjustment, but at the same time, after running a program with all these students and this number of kids, it's not bad to have some weekends where I'm not away for the entire weekend.
Yeah, I find that over time I change my schedule. Is it what makes sense for me, and it adjusts. But a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Of course, I'm in the tab rooms now, so that makes things a little different. Speaking of the national circuit, I mean, do you have thoughts on the national circuit? Just as a, you know, what the national circuit does, assuming, and correct me if you think this isn't true, assuming that there is a certain style of national circuit debate, how do you feel about that style? How do you feel about what goes on in the national circuit?
Well, first, I guess in terms of the national circuit style, I don't know that there is a national circuit style. I know that there are styles that are easier to find on the national circuit. And the reason that I make that distinction is that I find that sometimes people who don't have the styles that are often associated with the national circuit get discouraged from even trying these kinds of tournaments. I think that, you know, a misinformed move and often counter-educational, because many of the people who are among the most successful national circuit debaters are debaters who have styles that you don't necessarily associate with the national circuit. Many of them have come from Hendrik Hudson, and I think that there are plenty of debaters who can do very well without having a style that is seen as quote-unquote national circuit and still do well on the national circuit. That having been said, there are some trends that I see on the circuit that I don't necessarily approve of. At St. Mark's, for example, a couple of weeks ago, I was surprised by the number of rounds, which included things that I sort of asked not to be included in my paradigm, not even to make a value judgment on whether or not these things are good or bad, simply I'm not a good judge for it. So if students want to complain afterwards that I didn't get the argument, well, I admitted from the start that I probably wasn't going to get the argument or wasn't going to be good at evaluating the argument. My main worry about the national circuit is actually far less about the style and more about the ability to be included in it. I'm tapping my pen, and I've just and stared at by Jim Benick. I want every listener at home to know that. Okay, I've stopped tapping my pen. Anyway, back to what I was saying. My bigger concern is the financial difficulty of getting involved in national circuit debate. It concerns me, for example, that Bronx Science and Newark Science are sometimes the only schools represented from the urban New York area at some of these big national circuit tournaments. And sometimes, you know, Stuyvesant and Regis are along as well. But all in all, for a city that has millions and millions of people, it concerns me that there aren't as many schools involved at these larger tournaments. And, you know, some might say that that's because they're not interested, but I suspect that in some cases it's simply that the cost is prohibitive and the travel arrangements
are... I mean, not speaking for them, but just speaking for my own team, kids would go. So I think any place where there is a team
right.
that would like to go to these tournaments, but the money is prohibited.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, in a lot of ways, there's no way that a national, that the tournaments themselves can do anything about it, because the tournament costs are generally not very high. It's the cost of getting to the tournament or staying at the tournament. I mean, not as many tournaments outside the Northeast, I've discovered, really offer housing all that much.
And I think that's one of the great things that makes the Northeast work.
Absolutely.
That we can have the programs is because I can go week after week and not have to buy a lot of hotel
space. I don't think it would work otherwise, for us at least. And we're fortunate because we have a lot of alumni who help subsidize tournaments, but I'm very conscious of the fact that a lot of kids do not have that privilege. And it was especially apparent to me because prior to working at Bronx Science, I'd worked with students, some who went to affluent public schools, other ones who went to private schools, and even then, it dawned on me how much money these trips were really costing, even for just two people to go on a trip. So that, to me, is the bigger concern about the national circuit, and I don't really know how to solve that problem directly because there's not much tournaments can do. I mean, if tournaments can offer housing, that would be great, but that's not always an option either.
I think what happens, the national circuit continues and does whatever it does, and people who can go will go. What's the important thing is that we do have local circuits for everyone that people can afford, so that it doesn't become... Expense should not be a factor.
Right.
I mean, you ought to be able, and we have, obviously, here we have the Mid-Hudson League, presumably the Long Island League, whatever. Right. These leagues are accessible to people.
Absolutely.
At a reasonable cost. Nobody's making a buck off of these things, and you're just getting, like this league, all we do is we pay for the trophies.
Right. And I mean, when I was in high school, I don't even know that I knew what the TOC, I don't know when I knew what the TOC was. I didn't even know what Nationals was my freshman year. I mean, to me, debate was, let's hop on a yellow school bus, go a few miles away, have a tournament, be excited because I have an opportunity to go to Albany, and to me, Albany was the big travel tournament. So I know that I got a lot out of debate from that experience. I mean, obviously, I'm still involved with it, and I'm more involved with it now than ever. So I think the continued existence of things like that is what's most important. And one of the great things about working at a camp, for example, and sometimes being able to be at tournaments in the area that still attract a very national crowd is to see students from all these different areas interacting with one another and getting an opportunity to see different styles of debate. And since, in theory, the national circuit should be kids traveling from all over the country who also debate on their local circuits, in theory, you should be seeing lots of different styles. Now, the only concern that I have sometimes is students who seem to lose total interest in being involved in their local circuit. That, to me, is the bigger concern about the national circuit. It's less the actual style of debate that's there and the creation of a national circuit style because it's no longer different local circuits sending kids. It's just kids who just compete at these big tournaments.
I was thinking of something along these lines, which is just formulating the idea that the best debaters I have had on my team have not been the best debaters who've gone out and debated successfully as much as, and sometimes it's been the same people. The best debaters are the ones who work with the younger kids, who bring all the skills, who think in terms of something other than their own competitive
success. I think that's
success.
Absolutely true.
And those are the ones who've made a difference in debate beyond just winning some trophies.
Absolutely.
And I see it all the time. I see it all over the place. And sometimes, and I don't want to say that kids who are really, really good at debate aren't doing it too.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that on my own team, I've had kids that have been spectacular debaters and very good at working with other people, too. And that's, the thing. And as soon as somebody goes off as a knight errant and just debate, I've never really understood some of that. What are they? They're never home.
I know.
They don't go to school.
You're speaking to the wrong person. Because like I said, a lot of people will associate me with the national circuit, but I was never a national circuit debater. And actually, the interesting thing was that I can't really pinpoint the date where, or the time or whenever, the tournament where suddenly I felt like I was that was what I was being associated with instead of being at a national circuit tournament and being seen as the outsider. Mm-hmm. But it's very odd, and I find that, you know, but then no, on the other hand, I find...
You give the reports, and you take the picture, and you're there, so everyone knows you.
I guess that's true.
Because you have the visibility on the website, so you become identified with it for whatever reason, just because you're the only person that...
Oh, I guess that's probably true.
It's that sort of thing. And, yeah, it's just the way it goes. One of the things I know that you are very interested in is the history of debate.
That's true.
Digging up every useless piece of information.
Definitely.
Possible. Why? I mean, I...
Okay. Yeah. That's a fair question. Okay.
Not that there's anything wrong with it.
Right. Well, okay. Well, I guess the first part is that, like I said, as just in life, I tend to be a reservoir of useless information. I've always been a trivia person. When I was younger, I used to dream of
being... We will be playing You Don't Know Jack.
Of course.
Not today, maybe, but eventually.
Of course.
Well, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon.
Yes, okay. I consider myself a reservoir of useless information. If you get to sports, I know nothing, but on a lot of other things...
Right,
fair enough. Okay. I mean, because that was an immediate handicap, but with a lot of other things, I mean, with history, I like real minutia, things like that.
You've gone out of your way, but this is minutia.
Right, well, that's true. So, I guess, I think there are a couple of real reasons that I'm specifically interested in debate history. I mean, obviously, I am involved in debate, so I like knowing about the background of the event in which I am, in which I participate. I think that it's important to have a collective memory in debate, and I think that the reason that that's important is because more than just hearing the war stories or hearing the names or the stats, knowing who these previous great successful debaters were, and just as importantly, if not more importantly, successful coaches, I think that this creates a sort of respect for a tradition that has come before current competitors. And I think that is important because I think that a lot of times debaters lose sight of the fact that the choices that they make in rounds, especially in out rounds or especially in front of novices, really has a tremendous effect on the shape of debate. I mean, people still try to sound like debaters that didn't even debate when they were debating because other people have told them that is how a great debater acts. And I actually think knowing something about those debaters can really help. Now, one could argue that seeing a results sheet from the bump tournament in 1995
which
doesn't
one has
right,
argued,
that's true,
yes.
which one does have, thank you, R.J. Policiota, but seeing that might not necessarily tell you about those debaters, but I think that having a record of what has come before can spark conversation, and that might sound really hopelessly idealistic, but I really do believe, actually, that knowledge of what has happened before in the activity is really important. I also think that I'll throw this out there. The idea of memorizing old stats and facts and figures, even in debate, was around before I came around. Mr. Koshy at Apple Valley has claimed to be the baseball card debater or what have you, but I have found that a lot of times the stats that people memorize are like the TOC only, and I think that that's important to know that there are other tournaments that also have a history. And the TOC is just one of them, is the championship of a lot of these tournaments, but there are other tournaments that have histories as well. I think it's interesting to know who's come before you. Plus, it's a really good excuse to have nice, big, shiny traveling trophies at my own tournament, I'm not going to lie.
Which you do have.
Which I do have.
Shiny trophy.
I love
what you've done with the tournament.
Thank you.
You don't have to answer this, I'll just say, because the tournament fell on hard times, and you brought it back through entirely yourself, and you should be proud of yourself.
Well, thank you.
For having done that, and I'm really glad because I get to send kids to your tournament.
What?
So it works for everybody. I mean, people who build good, it's hard to build a tournament, and so anybody can build a tournament. And again, but this is one of the things about the Bronx. I mean, the Bronx does have the potential because it does have history and it does have resources. So somebody like you going in there, has been good for the Bronx and good for you.
I appreciate
I think.
That.
And it's great, like I said, I think it's great what you've done with the tournament. One of the things, now you do judge a lot. So, I mean, and you judge
a lot. I have found recently that I haven't always judged as many rounds as I had in the past. And that may say something about my...
Are you getting struck a lot? Is this right?
That may be.
I mean, do you like judging?
I do like judging. I like judging generally. I don't like judging when, I mean, I think no judge likes judging when they know that they're the judge that people aren't going for in the panel, mm-hmm. or they know that they're the judge that the debaters are just going to choose to ignore the paradigm. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't tend to happen with me, I find. The only time where I don't enjoy judging is when I feel that the debaters in the round aren't acting professional, in the sense that the debaters aren't being, you know, polite adversaries as opposed to cutthroat.
I mean, I've always asked my upperclassmen to work with the, and to explain why it is they like debate to the younger ones, and I think there's something if you're a debater that only a debater can explain. And I think there's something about judging, when you're really watching a good round, it's really great. It's really fun.
Absolutely.
You know, it's very, it's stimulating and it's entertaining at the same time.
I really enjoy it. I mean, I give up plenty of time per year to judge rounds, and I do enjoy it, and I like to think that I have, you know, some insight to give. Mm-hmm. I particularly like judging rounds with kids who are not the most established debaters, even if those most established debaters, by and large, will have the highest quality rounds, because I think that judging students who are learning about debate is meaningful, and frequently those are the students who will listen the most to you.
They
so.
Need it the most.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, absolutely. The ones, actually, to whom, I mean, you go to a round and it is just a bad round, and it's, you know, they really don't know what they're doing, and you really don't know what to say. Those are the students who need you more than anyone else to help them along. Otherwise, you're just going to muddle through forever.
I think that's very true.
Yeah. And it's hard. I mean, it actually is work. The one thing I wanted to go into as a summary, and I made it, I have little notes here, and they all say, you know, all these little fragmentary things. But the key thing, I mean, what do you see as your own personal future?
Okay, that's...
I mean, don't tell me you're quitting next week.
No, don't worry. I don't plan on quitting.
And you're going back to school, you're going to be an accountant.
Right. Well, I really enjoy working at Bronx Science, and I foresee staying there for the future.
I mean, actually, are you actually fully a teacher there now?
I am finishing my teaching certification. I actually work as a substitute teacher during the day.
Okay, so this will be the end of this school year?
That should be the end of the school year.
Good.
And my hope is to be accepted to a full-time position at the school. I work, you know, from the morning till the evening frequently at the school, so I hope to have a full-time job there during the day before I start the evening work with the debate people. Mm-hmm. If that pans out, which I hope it will.
And that would be just a regular teaching. I wouldn't be teaching, I mean, regular teaching, not debate, but it would be teaching
I can't say for sure what classes they have. There have been debate classes in the past. There actually are forensics classes in the English department in which you learn about books, but there's a public speaking component, which I think is really interesting. Okay. And there is a debate class that is coordinated during the day for students, mostly officers on the team, that was started by one of my predecessors at this school. I guess I see myself working at Bronx Science full time.
With any luck, Bronx Science sees you working at Bronx Science full time.
I hope so. It's interesting because before I got into college, I don't think I would have ever seen myself as a high school teacher. My mother is a high school teacher. She actually taught at my high school. So there's some interesting chemistry going on there. Perhaps as a result of that, I told myself, I'd never be a high school teacher. And actually, I was one of these people who was a very snooty pre-graduate school type who thought, I'm going to get my PhD in high school teaching is so far beneath me. But the truth is that I knew from the start that I really liked working with kids. I used to work at best be described as a nerd camp, and enjoyed it a lot. And as college went on, I began to realize that that's really what I wanted to do, and that teaching is really beneath no one. I think it's a very valuable and important thing to do. I mean, you know, where would we be without our teachers? I know it's like really cliched, but I think it's true. So I foresee myself continue to be very involved in debate and involved in education. In terms of specific plans, I'm not so sure. Where I currently live at the moment, I don't know that I'll still be living there in a few years.
The real thing, here's the one key question. If I had no other question to ask. You are doing debate all the time.
That's true.
What the hell else do you do?
Uh-oh.
Other than debate? I mean, you're spending 25 hours a day on debate. So what do you do that has nothing to do with debate?
Okay. The really nerdy things to start with. I guess they only have to do with debate because they're nerdy. from a very young age, I've been a obsessive Star Wars fan. A lot of people do know that about me. I have a collection that is so large, in fact, that it is actually insured. Okay? And that is quite pathetic. It is pathetic. I have well over 1,000 action... Probably 2,000 action figures, posters, memorabilia, and it's not just Star Wars. It's all George Lucas-related things. I'm a big George Lucas fan.
A lot of Howard the Duck.
I do have a Howard the Duck poster. Do you know what the tagline of Howard the Duck was?
No.
More adventure than humanly possible. Very clever on George's part, I think. But so I do have a lot of George Lucas memorabilia. And beyond Star Wars, I also like Star Trek, but I'll avoid the really nerdy things. Recently, I have discovered... this is scary. But I have recently... I'm really more pathetic than I thought. Okay, I recently have realized how much... time of my social life has been eaten up by debate. Actually,
it does eat one social lifetime, no question.
And in fact, I would like to take this opportunity to put out a message to any college students who are listening to this that when you get very involved in college coaching, don't forget to balance your time with your friends, because sometimes people don't understand how great debate is unless they're involved in debate, and don't really understand why you're giving up your weekends constantly. So that can really put a damper on your ability to have large networks of friends. And I think I'm a pretty friendly guy and had a lot of friends in college, but sometimes it made it really difficult to keep up those friendships. So you need to balance your time even after you're a debater, if you're still involved in debate. But beyond the Star Wars and other really nerdy science fiction things, I am a big film fan in general. I do love Living in the City because there was an ability to see a lot of lesser known films. I like the opportunity to be really touristy in New York sometimes. It's very weird. I'm also a huge Disney fan. So when I'm not obsessing about Star Wars, I probably am obsessing over the Disney princesses. But hey,
you go to Disney World every 2 years or so?
About every 2 years. Okay. Every year. But I am.
If you are, next May, if you go down, we'll be
there. That'd be exciting. There would be VBD coverage if we did that, I think. But no, I really like Disney World. I guess what I find interesting about places like Disney World is that I think, and this might be something I really like about debate too, I kind of like the idea of constructed worlds and like constructed things, and I think that debate is really a lot about that too, by constructing, you know, an ideal world on one side or the other. And that might sound really corny and old-fashioned, but I do think a lot of LD has to do with that. So I guess the sad truth, there's no big expose here. Like, my life outside of debate is pretty much as nerdy as
you like
as
being in the city, like all the time.
I do love being in the city.
You sit getting around seeing movies. And
I do. I have
being in the city as much as
I mean, sometimes
else.
I do have, like, the daydreams about, you know, living in the countryside or whatever, but then I realize I'd probably get very bored because I tend to be a very active person. But not exercise active, just active.
You're still living
So that was what I was referring to before in terms of not still living in the same apartment. I do at the moment through the generosity of my my grandfather and this sort of transitional stage of my life because I've been doing the sub work and finishing my teaching certification. My grandfather did give me an apartment that he owns in 15th Avenue actually, which is very cool to be able to tell people that I live in 15th Avenue, and then they kind of wonder how I'm doing that on my salary. And I don't usually go into details, but now everyone can know, and that's how. So
sounds
Tim
good
Burton lives in my building. That's the big claim to fame.
Well, you also live somewhere in England.
Yeah, I know.
Some other places.
But I like
too.
To say, but I like to point out people like Burton Cummings.
Isn't he actually with What's Her Face there?
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah, that.
I saw him in an elevator once. It was really cool.
What's her name? Bonham Carter. I think they're actually living together, but you don't see her.
See, I really like, I've never seen her. I really like films and film trivia. Jeez. Probably doesn't surprise people. But
you don't even know who's living with the people you're living
right,
with.
Right, exactly.
I mean,
but in terms of like celebrity relationships, that I don't know.
You just draw the line. Debate relationships, okay. Celebrity relationships,
that I have no comment.
Draw the line.
On that I have no comment.
Yeah, that's okay. Now, what we really want to do is hear about the sex lives of everyone you know in debate. So we're going to turn this off and